Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Cause and Effect on the Business Radio X Network, brought to you by our friends at UHY Advisors. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this morning. How are you holding up, man?
I am doing great. Excited about this show.
This is my favorite kind of show because we bring in people with real jobs and genuine credentials to help us guide the conversation. We're going to talk a little bit about cybersecurity and probably some other fun stuff. And we've got two pros in here to help us facilitate that discussion. We've got David Barton and Dave King with UHY Advisors. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
So, David Barton, I'm going to start with you. Can you share a little bit about why cybersecurity is on everybody's mind, especially this month?
Well, October is Cybersecurity Month, Cybersecurity Awareness Month. It's a joint effort from Homeland Security and a lot of other government agencies. The government obviously is very concerned about cybersecurity, given recent events and breaches and so on that have plagued both business and government. So this initiative was established a few years ago as part of an executive order that President Obama put forth. And basically, it's an effort to, again, raise awareness throughout industry and government, just across the board.
Now, are there ribbons? Is there a color? Like a,
it's pink, isn't it?
I don't know.
I'm seeing pink everywhere this month.
Yeah, that's a different awareness month. But no, not to my knowledge. I mean, it is, like I said, a joint initiative. I don't know that there's any ribbons or banners or colors or any of that. But perhaps they should be.
Yeah, it certainly feels like a patriotic initiative. So if there were any colors, then I would say... Yeah, Old Glory sounds pretty good. Yeah.
So now, from a UHY standpoint, why is it important to you guys?
Cybersecurity or Cybersecurity right. Awareness Month?
The month.
The month is important to us because it helps us to bring awareness and helps us to have opportunities like this one to be able to talk about cybersecurity from a business perspective and make sure that our clients and our future clients and our prospects are all aware of what we do and how we can help them deal with cybersecurity issues.
Now, right. To flesh this out, you brought a couple of friends, right?
Yes, we brought a couple of friends and clients. Glenn Eastmore is with Ventive Technologies, and they're an existing customer and client of ours. Glenn East, why don't you share a little bit about
yeah, what are you guys yourself? Doing for folks?
Absolutely. So at Ventive Technology, we are a risk management and assurance software development company. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily your regular old, you know, company that's out there creating different types of code and making a software and selling it. More so than anything, we have a huge analytics piece tool that is our bread and butter for that software. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do for companies. Usually our clients use our software for workers' comp. Mm-hmm. So
now where does cybersecurity come into play for your firm?
Wow, that's a really good question. Cybersecurity comes in play for us is because of the type of data that flows through our system, flows through our software. Mm-hmm. We handle a lot of PHI and with handling...
What's PHI?
Good question.
That's why we have lay people on the panel.
There you go. PHI is personal health information. Mm-hmm. So anything from a person's name to what type of health issues they may be having, that's what PHI, that's what it is. And we handle a lot of that. That's a lot of data that comes through our software, comes through our system. That's what our clients use it for. So with that said, PHI is probably one of the top things that hackers are actually looking for. PHI is something that it never changes. You mm-hmm. can't change it. It's not like a username or a password. So regardless of the fact, when you're born, you're going to be born with a name, a date of birth, a social security number, and that's PHI, and that's something that's probably one of the top things.
And then
there.
So security is important to your company.
Absolutely. So security is important to our company because, again, we are responsible for being a protector of PHI that is owned by our clients. Mm-hmm. So it makes us a target Hopefully, we're not high on the target list, but it makes us a target in the industry from a cybersecurity standpoint, and we want to make sure that we're doing everything we possibly can to protect that data.
And there's regulations now. This isn't just, you're not doing this because it's good business. You're doing it partially because it's good business, but also there's laws and stuff in effect that you have to do things a certain way, right, to protect this.
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the biggest laws or regulations, should I say, is going to be HIPAA. So the HIPAA framework, HIPAA regulations are what we really hone in on. HIPAA really is tied directly to PHI. It's probably one of the only frameworks, and you guys helped me out with this at UHY, but it's one of the only frameworks that is really directed towards PHI. So that's right. Top on our list.
That's right.
Well, and your people have to be really good at articulating and assuring your clients that you're compliant and that their data is not at risk, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's myself and our VP of infrastructure as well as security. We work hand in hand to make sure that we're directing our entire organization on what it means to really, truly be secure. So many times, you know, from a software development company, you're not thinking about, you know, yeah, we need to make sure that we put a password on this or we put a lock on this. They're not thinking about that. That's not at the forefront. So it's my job and my VP's job to make sure that we're pushing it home to everybody, regardless if it's the person that's sitting at the front desk, make sure the door is locked, or regardless if it's, you know, one of the developers and they're creating code, make sure you put some code in there and do all your security things to make sure that nothing can happen with that code and you're protecting it at all times.
And then part of the pitch is I've got Dave and David in my corner, so there's nothing to worry about.
You're absolutely right about that. These guys absolutely keep us in line.
One of the reasons why we thought it, why Ventev was first and foremost in our mind to invite to Business Radio X today is because their strategy for compliance is a strategy of risk management. In other words, they share the same philosophy that we share, which is let's focus on managing risk and let's let our state of compliance be a byproduct of that effort.
Right.
So that's a really important consideration that I think a lot of businesses tend to misdirect their internal audit efforts to.
It's almost like they just kind of tack it on instead of it just being holistically involved in the company.
That's right. That's right.
So now, who else did you bring?
We've also got Tony Ucidavillez, who is...
we made you say his name.
See how we did that?
I like the way you did that.
It's not our first rodeo, David.
I'll say it again. Ucidavillez.
That's pretty good.
Tony is the CEO of Versprite Technologies.
Yeah, Tony, what are you doing for folks?
So I'm the CEO of Versprite. We're an Atlanta-based professional service firm. Mm-hmm. One of the many things that we do is managed services, but we focus on three major areas of governance, risk and compliance, application security, and security operations. So
that's a lot of security.
That's a lot of security.
Must be important.
And that's just the abridged version. we met David and David. We provide managed services around virtual CISO, which is really a prolific type of service that is out there by professional service firms like ourselves that are working with Fortune 500 organizations. And we basically run the security program for a major hosting company that has an international footprint. Mm-hmm. But part of what we do as a company is really strategic services around building security programs, testing applications, building secure architectures, and also dealing with various facets of compliance.
So now, are you on the same page regarding it being holistically involved in the company and part of the strategy?
Yes, absolutely. So when, you know, the CISO is an acronym for Chief Information Security Officer, and that is the individual that basically runs a security program for an entire organization. And that organization could be just stateside or it can be an international organization. So you have to consider not just simply, you know, building policies around security, but and also being conversant in technology, emerging technologies that your IT departments are working with. But you also have to see how do you roll out a program that fits well with the corporate culture and the business operation goals and objectives. And that's the bigger challenge.
So now, in today's world, what are some of the emerging threats that you guys see?
Well, right off the bat, you know, one of the most, you know, emerging threats is definitely the mobile landscape. You know, a lot of people don't realize that there are mobile rootkits out there for sale. So a lot of the bad...
What's a rootkit?
A rootkit is a kit that you can buy off of the internet, usually the dark web. There's a marketplace for malware, and rootkit is a form of malware. And what it does is it compromises a system or smartphone in this case, and it looks to extract data or interactions from your smartphone to usually web application servers. Mm-hmm. So most of your favorite mobile apps like Twitter and you know, your favorite banking apps, they're interfacing with a web application programming interface, API. And so the rootkit is looking to capture a lot of the credentials, the information that's locally stored, and it's skyrocketing. There's multiple different researches from different players in the industry that have substantiated that as a key emerging threat today.
So, David's, what do you guys do to educate your clients about all this stuff?
Basically, we start with a holistic approach, as everybody's talked about, and focus on risk. And rather than just focusing on technology risk or technology security solutions, we like to look at it holistically from the standpoint of people, process, and technology. Mm-hmm. And the one of the biggest weaknesses we see in industry right now from a cybersecurity standpoint is the weaknesses around people. Many of the breaches we've seen in the last 2 years or so have come about not because of technology failures, but because of people failures. The phishing emails that turn into access into a company's network, and then from getting access into the network, spreading that throughout the network, taking over administrative rights within the network. A lot of big names and a lot of big breaches have occurred because of the failure of people to recognize, you know, phishing emails and that sort of thing.
Okay, but this isn't just annoying. This can cost a company a great deal of money. Am I right?
Absolutely. Oh, sure. A lot of the frauds that we've seen, which have resulted in millions of dollars being taken from companies, have resulted, again, not because of firewall failures or anything to do with the perimeter-based security. It's just someone getting an email that looks like it's coming from the CEO that says, please send a wire transfer to this company with this, you know, wire transfer details.
Mm-hmm.
And because they want to be helpful and because there's an urgency around it, they go ahead and they send that money. And then only later find out that that wasn't the CEO that sent that email. It was some hacker in China or Eastern Europe or Russia.
See, I can see myself falling for this. If I got an email that I thought was from Lee or our producer, Ryan, I mean, I would probably try to act pretty quickly, try to do my thing, get it off my plate, help them out.
Absolutely.
How do you sure. stop that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, one of the key ways that you can stop that is simply through training and awareness. Letting your users and the executives in your company really know what type of risks and risk scenarios are out there. We just started working on a client to help them remediate some audit findings that were the result of over $46 million of fraudulent wire transfers.
Wow.
Leaving the company. When it was discovered that this level, this magnitude of fraudulent wire transfers was released, the CEO let go of the entire accounting group. So, you know, it's not awesome. Just money leaving company. It's livelihoods. It's food on the table for, you know, you're talking about a department of 40, 50 people that got let go at this company. So we're in there trying to keep our clients from having to experience the magnitude and these sorts of layoffs and the reputational damage that's also a result of this. So one of the things that we do is phishing campaigns. So we get a list of all the employees in the company that have some type of access to sensitive data, and we put our hacker hats on and we try to exploit the individuals in the company into clicking on links that they shouldn't and sharing passwords that they shouldn't. And then we feed those reports directly to executive leadership. you know, our position, and this is something that's it's not really a hard sell for us. If our clients have employees, and if those employees have an internet connection, they're at risk.
They are vulnerable.
But how can you have a company and not trust an email from the CEO or an executive? Like, how do you manage around that?
Right. So does the call to action from the CEO seem odd?
A lot of the fraud that has occurred as a result of business email compromise is coming from the fact that you've got separation between divisions and so on. One of the other big cases was in Europe. There was a manufacturing company that had their central offices in Germany, and the plant that was targeted was in Eastern Europe. So you've got this controller at a smaller facility getting an email from the chief financial officer of the headquarters in Germany, right, that says, do this. So again, it's call to action. It's a much higher level executive telling a much lower level executive what to do and how, right, to do it. But all that aside, this all boils down to basic policy and procedure, basic kinds of controls that should be in place anytime you're doing a wire transfer. Not only just not just segregation of duties, but now we're seeing policies and procedures evolving to the point where if there's a wire transfer that's coming as a result of an email, call the person that sent that email to verify that they sent it.
That's one of the things that is huge with Ventiv technology right now. Security awareness is probably on the top of our list. We are a global company. So just as David just mentioned, we have offices that are all over the world. With that being said, if someone sends an email from our Chicago office over to our UK office, how are they supposed to know for sure that that came from the correct person?
Right.
So we have expressed to our employees over and over again, that's probably the biggest thing on the list, is to verify, always verify. Don't be afraid to pick up the phone and say, hey, did you mean to send me that email? Let's just double check and make sure before we move forward.
So now, isn't everybody think that's kind of funny and ironic that now that we're back to having to make phone calls and stuff when everything was at the speed of the internet?
That's exactly right. Well, it's interesting. What we find time and time again, especially in these fraudulent wire transfer cases, is that the perimeters of the environment, meaning the firewalls in these companies, don't get infiltrated. The systems that are running these companies and the desktop computers in these companies don't really have high infestation rates of malware, right? So nowadays, hackers are targeting people.
Because the weakest link is the human being.
That's exactly right.
I think it's going to vary for really industry. I mean, we deal with a lot of different industry sets. I mean, there probably isn't one that we don't cover, but you know, financial industry, for example, or fintech, banking, all those, they're dealing, and they have for a long time, with botnets. I mean, that's their nemesis. If you go to an FSISAC, which is a organization that looks at emerging threats and specifically targeting financial, I mean, botnets resonate with every executive from Citigroup to Bank of America to UBS in Switzerland and beyond. So then you have other industries where the nature of these types of attacks, the types of rootkits that I alluded to before, right, the types of malware, they're all very custom, right? And they're all very cognizant of what operations are happening in manufacturing, in higher education, in retail, in banking, et cetera. So, you know, going back to your question, how do you actually detect that there's something fraudulent when you get an email from the CEO? And here's some telltale signs that really the listeners can abide by. Number one is context. So when you know, we do a lot of security training globally, and one of the things is we always say, if the context of the request is out of place, then you know that's an immediate alarm.
That's red flag.
That's red flags. Mm-hmm. Hackers are always using emotional ploys, the emotional ploy of fear, power, or incentives in order to trigger a response. So that, you know, that's something that is kind of a steadfast point shared amongst different security awareness campaigns. So the context is one. Number two, simply looking at the domain name. You know, so when you go and get an email, typically you're not looking at the actual email itself. You're looking at Bob Smith sent me an email from a major company, or maybe he's my CEO. And you don't stop the check just to look at the email domain in which it's coming from. Hackers, you know, we, similar to UHY, we do different types of social engineering campaigns where we're registering, you know, domains in a minute. And a technology that's free out there for many of your listeners to even invest in, or not really invest because it's free, is OpenDNS. So OpenDNS runs on your machine. It's absolutely free. And if you even click on a link for a domain that's been registered in the past couple minutes, hours, you know, it's probably not a...
It's another red flag.
Yeah. So there's a couple of simple things that takeaways. Context is one. And then, yeah, you know, it's unfortunate that we have to do the out-of-band communication, pick up the cell phone, pick up the phone and say, hey, I got this from you. Is this really legitimate? But, you know, this is the growing nature. And we talked about email a lot. There's statistics emerging on social media. Same type. Phishing has always been associated with email.
Right.
But this same type of technique, as people start to interact with one another over LinkedIn, over Twitter, over Facebook, these same ploys are going over those channels as unique attack vectors.
And you mentioned earlier these bots, these new chat bots that are popping up everywhere. That seems that's a huge opportunity for some bad stuff to happen in that space as well.
Right. The botnets, what a botnet is basically it's a form of malware that can run within, usually within an enterprise. The goal of the botnet is to interact with other botnets around the globe. It's almost like a distributed network of botnets communicating with one another. And there is a central authority called a command and control center. And it's very much like, you know, something that you would see in a sci-fi thing, you know, show on TV. But these botnets are for sale. You can be a hacker syndicate, maybe subsidized by, you know, a government entity or maybe even a corporate entity internationally. And there are operators that are being paid a lot of money to author new botnets to get into networks and steal information. And that information goes beyond just simply, you know, PHI in healthcare or PII, personal identifiable information in general, but also goes into intellectual property. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of business cases for doing that.
Right. And it's important to remember that cybersecurity isn't just about financial firms or even healthcare firms. Like there's people out there that this is their job 24/7 to get all kinds of information. Right.
So, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, so there's the profile of the hacker is, you know, there's this personality type called the script kiddie. And the script kiddie is your, you know, it's funny. There's an actual statistic that shows a rise in attacks during the summer because you have high school and college
right,
kids that are out
from school right.
and they're testing out these novelties of different types of, you know, brute force attacks, which are trying to get into applications or denial of service type kits and scripts that are out there for free. And so there's always a rise in these attacks in the summertime. But then you go to the other side of the spectrum and you have organized crime groups like the Russian Business Network, or you have, you know, the Syrian Electronic Army, or you have Lizard Squad, or you have Collective Armada. There's tons of these different organized groups that have very sophisticated operations on, number one, harvesting credentials that have been compromised from places like Yahoo. That recently happened, right? Harvesting intel about, you know, people's networks, and then harvesting, you know, profiles of where people are, their roles, responsibilities, who they're married to, where they went to college, everything.
Right. They're looking at this very strategically because this is their job 24/7. This is all they're thinking about.
Exactly.
And then a company is thinking about what they do for a living and how they serve their customers. And then, oh, by the way, I have to also think about these other guys and protect myself.
So is the phone just ringing off the hook for you guys and for you guys, Glenice? I mean, this seems like a really rich environment for a business. Or do you have to go out there and market your services? Or, they must be coming to you like crazy.
I think we all can say that, you know, business is very good. And we, you know, that we don't really, you know, this sounds it isn't true, but we're, I think like most of the people on this table here that are in the industry, we're really trying to foster change. I think business comes second. What we want to see is change within the organizations that we are either leading their security programs or we are helping them with audit control frameworks or risk analysis. The problem is as UHY or, you know, Versprite or, you know, other companies that are out there that are helping in different, you know, spaces, you know, is to be able to make lasting change. Oftentimes, you know, for example, both Davids may run a security awareness campaign, and it might sink in to the population there at a company for a good month or two or three. But, you know, human tendency is to go back to what they know and what they do normally, which unfortunately is bad. So that there is a high demand definitely in incidents response and forensic analysis and preventative security measures, like, you know, architecture, security architecture, secure software development. So it's a broad information security used to be a niche. Now it's a fully fledged industry which has multiple different, you know, facets of services that can be provided.
So Tony, let me bring this back to how our relationship was established. You mentioned that you provide professional services to industry clients, and one of those clients is one of our clients as well.
Right.
So in that particular company is is providing data center type services,
right?
Co-location facility, top notch. Talk about the reliance that those customers have on that data center, on the security there. Is there an over-reliance there? And how do you get beyond that and get to the ultimate customers and get them aware?
Right. And like it was said before, so people process technology, and that's kind of an adage that's been in the industry for some time. And when you talk about hosting services or network services, you think about brick and mortar, you know, very large buildings that have, you know, very large floor space of servers and network infrastructure, switches, routers, firewalls, right, et cetera. And so physical security is important. You know, knowing what vendors have access to what is important. And sometimes that visibility is a challenge for many hosting cloud service providers that are out there. And so, you know, as a service, we run the security program, and I know that UHY provides the audit framework and the visibility in terms of IT controls for this organization as well. So it's important to understand what are our procedural-based controls that the company follows, you know, at an operational level. You know, when you have data centers across the globe and your customers, very large, you know, customers across multiple different industries that have multiple different regulatory concerns, are relying on your availability of services, on your security of services, then there's really no room for error. Because one error could actually lead to a data compromise, or worst case scenario, a persistent compromise, which simply means that the bad guys get in, they get in undetected, and they're there living in your house, metaphorically speaking, in your network, and they're just sitting there and collecting data for a long period of time. So, you know, the key is you know, from the building, physical security, to the people in terms of security processes, to the technology and how it's configured, it's all extremely important.
And then when you say the building, some of these cloud service providers, that's huge facilities, right?
Right.
I mean, and they can have hundreds, if not thousands, of clients that are all using a rack or something, and mm-hmm. people are wandering around. You don't know who's who.
Yeah. So let's talk about this, because, I mean, most people think, well, if you've looked at a data center, it looks like, you know, it's a label-less building, generally. Doesn't right. have a label. You don't even know it's a data center. It's got very little windows. And it looks
great
like
air conditioning.
It's got great air conditioning. Yeah, it does. But it's fortified through the roof. But there's a lot of kinks in the armor. And the Trojan horses in would be, you know, vendor relationships. So oftentimes a data center may contract out certain types of services, maybe for physical security,
right?
Maybe for cleaning and maintenance and wiring and doing some sort of just, you know, ongoing
right.
maintenance.
Innocuous, boring something.
Exactly. Right. And then also they order equipment. You know, these places order technology, and, you know, there's who's inspecting the technology, how are they validating the technology before it gets racked, before it gets networked. These are concerns that every major, you know, player in the hosting and IP and cloud business really has to consider, because it's affecting so many companies.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you assure those customers that the organization is doing it correctly?
So, you know, part of it is, you know, there's ongoing vigilance, you know, through enterprise security audits. I know that within, you know, the company, our internal audit group works heavily with you know, with outside, you know, experts like such as UHY. But traditionally, you know, there's security operations, right? Security operational groups at these locations are looking at the, they're looking at what's called eyes on glass. They're looking at, you know, blinking lights, alarms. They're looking to see where illegitimate access was taken on the network or on different systems. But here's the thing, you know, having actually been in those shoes before in my prior life, it's a job where you're working 12 hours, you know, and as a human, you get desensitized to all these alerts. And so there's a lot of inefficiency of how SOCs operate today. And what technology players are looking to do is to take, because they're having to look at a lot of information. Technology players are trying to give them the most ripest pieces of security alert data possible. Because when you're looking at anywhere from 1,000 alerts a day as a human, you're going to get a little bit tired. So, you know, technology player, the technology is evolving today where it's correlating network analysis, firewall alerts, alerts from servers, alerts from other types of technologies in the infrastructure to say this is real and this has been substantiated. And that's come a long way. Mm-hmm. And that's going to make the actual human role of monitoring and being in security operations to go to operate a lot more efficiently.
So Glenys, in your business, I'm sure you guys use a hosting provider as well. And so what's important to you as a user of one of these large data centers, and how do you kind of get comfort around the fact that they're doing it right?
Well, two things. One being that, of course, we rely on the fact that a company like UHY has come in and done an audit and, you know, has definitely gone through with a fine-tooth comb and understanding that they have controls in place that is protecting our environment. That's one aspect of it. But also, we take it upon ourselves to go in and do our own due diligence with going in and auditing the company as well, making sure that, you know, we understand the ins and outs of what our environment consists of in that location, who else is in that environment if there's no one else. But, you know, just really doing our due diligence, but also relying on third-party companies to come in and do their business as well.
Yeah, and speaking about, just if I can just add to that, you know, there's for the listeners out there, there's actually a deliverable that a lot of hosting providers, such as the one that I was mentioning before, that they subscribe to. It's called a SOC. It's a SOC 1 and SOC Type 2. These deliverables, like for example, the customers of hosting providers or cloud providers, they are looking to see how good is security at this place. And so there is a deliverable that basically is a fully fledged out inspection of IT controls that has been validated by a third party. And, you know, that's great in a couple reasons, because number one, like a major hosting provider can go and get an objective look at how they're doing their processes, their people, process, and technology. And so this deliverable is commonly used to basically show how resilient and how well prepared these types of technology companies are. So that's something that is extremely important to have a good sense of. Is this hosting provider, do they have their, are they subscribing to a good control framework? Are they actually doing what they're saying?
And what's interesting is, as somebody who, as a, you know, our firm provides the SOC reports that Tony was talking about, it's interesting how you can get into layering situations. So you've got Glenys, who provides a data analytics service to customers, but those services are hosted in a data center. Mm-hmm. So in providing that third-party attestation around the services that Ventev is providing, then there's also another third-party attestation around the data center that those services are hosted in. So you get this multi-layered thing going on, and it gets really complex really fast. And, you know, it's not one that's, it's not an easy thing for most of the consumers of those reports to really understand what the distinctions are between the types and how it all relates and who's responsible for what. So it gets very complex very quickly. Well,
vendor relationships are certainly very tricky. I mean, you know, we were all just joking a minute ago about how the climate in the data centers. Oh, it's great on a summer's day because it's so cool in there. Well, the reason why it's cool in there is because that data center probably has a really awesome HVAC right. vendor relationship. So this HVAC vendor is somebody that can also get access to the data center to replenish coolant as necessary and may even have remote access to the data center in order to just check on the temperature in the place. So these vendor relationships go all the way down. It's important to note, you know, something as seemingly innocuous as a HVAC vendor is exactly what led to Target's breach.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And let's talk a little bit about that, that we talked about people being the weakest link, third party vendors. That's also a challenge as well for companies because everybody's relying on a bunch of third party vendors. You mentioned the complexity in business. Companies are acquiring other businesses that have their own relationship with vendors. There's, you know, the world's changing so rapidly and their relationships are so intermingled nowadays. How do you protect yourself from these third party relationships?
Right. Well, the complexity level that we've been speaking of is, the complexity level is certainly high. Mm-hmm. What we communicate at UHY is we broke it down in a formula that just makes things very simple to communicate. And it's effectively one person plus one errant click equals a cyber attack. And that's across all employees.
Can bring the whole Opera down,
all customers,
right?
All vendor relationships.
One thing.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So that's the... That's, yes, it's complex to communicate the importance of remediating these cybersecurity risks is really just boiled down to that simple formula. One person, one click, cyber attack.
So are there some efforts, and maybe this already exists, to get third-party vendors, I don't know, somehow cybersecurity certified or verified or something like, is there something like that? You earn your, you know, I'm a good guy badge and I've learned
good things? Housekeeping seal of approval.
Yeah. Is there something like that kind of in the works?
There are many, many, many different frameworks. Some industries have developed their own. Mm-hmm. The payment card industry, credit cards.
Yeah.
Many years ago developed their own framework. And PCI DSS, you can become PCI certified if you're either a card vendor, a card processor. Every retailer, every internet merchant is supposed to adhere to all of these standards that the credit card companies have put together. And so that compliance is basically evaluated by third parties like UHY and others to determine whether or not they really are following those standards that were put together mm-hmm. within the industry. So that's one example of an industry. HIPAA was the government's attempt to control the security around health information.
Right.
ISO has their own variant, the International Standards Organization. You know, everybody, I guess 20 years ago or so, ISO 9000, that was the big deal in terms of companies.
That was quality, right?
It's quality, yeah. Yes. And now they've expanded and branched out and started covering a lot of other things, uh-huh. including cybersecurity. So the ISO 27001 standard. And now, you know, the government continues to get into the game. They have FSMA and several others. They've got, the financial industry has several.
FFIEC, have... NACHA for ACH transactions. You have NCUA for the credit unions. But, you know, so here's the thing. So it's going back to Target, and I'll address your question on vendor security badging and stuff like that. Target was actually fully certified with PCI DSS, with one of the largest quality qualified security assessors in the globe. And there's a common notion and understanding in security that compliance is not security whatsoever, and it should be reiterated time and time again.
Absolutely.
So, Target was fully certified with PCI DSS, which was the Payment Card Industry Data Security Standard, and the council actually had to take a step back and look at their process for certification and how they were certifying. And that really shook up a lot of the people that were doing the certification. But it's specific to vendor security risks. There really is not a badge. There's, you know, there's all these frameworks that are security control frameworks, and then there's all these laws like HIPAA, which is a law that came out in 1996, and then there's like FSMA, which is another government act, 2002. But there's no badge for vendor risk. In the end, here's some prescriptive guidance that if you're part of a small organization or if you're part of a large enterprise, you could really take to the bank. Number one, it begins with legal and procurement, right? So if you're part of a company and you're shopping around for vendors, you have a an opportunity there to take care of risk by doing some risk transference in the legal language in some of your contracts. And that's what a lot of companies don't really think about. They don't think about security when they're signing deals with the vendor. Mm-hmm. They need to understand what is the vendor doing in fulfillment of what my business objectives is as a corporation. So that's one. There's a legal slant. After the fact is, you know, doing vendor risk assessments. Now, there is a framework that's been around for a while called the shared assessments. And shared assessments is a nonprofit group that came up with this very exhaustive, close to 1,000 question survey for vendors.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty nauseating.
Absolutely. I've seen it.
But, you know, what happens is, as you can imagine, is these vendors get desensitized. I mean, they basically go into a half comatose state trying to fill this thing out, and you don't get really accurate answers on mm-hmm. the nature of security of these vendors. But what do the recipients of these, you know, major beefy packets do? They take it as gospel. And that's a big mistake. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what we recommend always at VerseBright is to do what we call contextual-based risk assessments. And that is simply, first of all, begin, what is this vendor doing for you? You know, sometimes, you know, let's say you have a marketing vendor. You know, do they have physical access to your building? Do they have logical connectivity to your infrastructure? Or are they just simply, you know, making nice marketing service sheets using nice images and video production? Then what you want to do is you want to tier up your vendors into criticality. These are the most important because they're going to affect, you know, me keeping the lights on, or these are the least important because I've looked at, you know, connectivity. Going back to the HVAC story, you know, the HVAC story was relevant because it had connectivity into Target's network and no one was the wiser. So there's, you know, you look at the data model, you look at the connectivity, you look at physical access, you look at the impact on your compliance. And those are some kind of key variables that should help to kind of create your own badging system with vendors.
And just to add to that, Vendor Technology, we're a vendor. OK, so Right. Of course, I like to say that I appreciate the fact that we're starting to see the transition in the industry. Clients are now coming to us. I literally, between my VP and myself, we're seeing at least 20 emails per day from our vendors saying, hey, can you fill out this questionnaire? Can you tell us how you do this? Can you tell us how you do that? We're sitting in on sales calls because they want to have the security team on the phone to tell us, what is your security posture?
So those are all good things.
Good, great things. And I am very passionate about the difference between compliance and security. Mm-hmm. And it's really good to see that companies are starting to take a stance and say, hey, let me know what your security is. Let me know who you are from a security standpoint, and we'll talk about the business and the product later. So I appreciate that aspect of how the industry is changing for us.
So before we wrap, I want to make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with everyone on the panel. But I'd like to dive into, since it is Cybersecurity Month, a bit of a conversation around careers in this arena. I'd like to start with Glenice. Glenice, I've been hanging out with you for almost 45 minutes now, and I've noticed you're a woman.
When I woke up this morning, I figured that was it.
The reason I mentioned that is it's my impression that we don't have as many females in the IT arena in general. I'm wondering what that looks like in the cybersecurity field. So I'd be interested in everyone's input, but first yours on, is this an arena that you would recommend that young ladies really take a serious look at? Is it a career you think they ought to pursue?
Absolutely. And you're right. First off, there are a few women that are represented in the IT world, anything that has to do with IT compliance, security, any of those aspects. Even more so from a cybersecurity standpoint, there are even fewer women. I sat for my QSA certification a couple of months ago, and literally sitting in that room, there was four of us and there was 50 men. So, you know, it's we were just happy to have the four. And we were just like, right. Oh, my gosh, you know, there's other women that are in here. It's growing. And I am a huge, huge advocate outside of work. When I go home in the afternoon, I put myself out there on a blog on my Twitter and I say, hey, ladies that are out there, if you want to transition into the world of IT security or compliance, let me know. And I'll help connect you to some of the people that are here that have jobs for you. Or, you know, if you're making a career transition, I put it out there. Hey, I can be a resource for you to connect the dots for you. And if you need any education wise or anything like that, I also put people in the right direction for getting those type of resources as well from an educational standpoint as well. So huge advocate for that. And I'm always on my Facebook, on my Twitter saying, hey, ladies, listen, Sands just put out, you know, a article 5 months ago saying that they're putting, they're hiring women by droves, thousands. They have a budget to hire so many women by the end of 2016. Put your name in a bucket. Just do it, you know? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Tony, yeah.
I was just going to say it's important to point out to Glenise's point that this is not a career field that's going away. The demand on this career field is only going to get higher. The expectations of businesses, the expectations of those businesses' vendors, is getting higher as well. So we need to be hiring armies of people that do what we do to, help customers, clients, and companies mitigate these type of cybersecurity risks. And again, these type of cybersecurity risks are not going away. They're only going to evolve.
Right. And we haven't even talked about like the Internet of Things and how that is impacted by cybersecurity and where there can be a lot of opportunities for bad guys, just like Tesla recently had a hacker stop a car.
Are they going to mess with my refrigerator now, right? Have you seen that commercial?
All of a sudden, your olives will spoil.
Right, I'll buy too many apples. It's going to, the whole world turn upside. So, Tony, you guys looking over there? Are you looking to recruit young people?
Always, yeah. You know, VersePrite is a global company. We have, employees in Buenos Aires. We have employees in San Francisco and Central America. Going back to the point on, the lack of women in this industry, I think that women must have, I'm not a sociologist or anything like that, but I think that women have a higher quality for, doing more, a certain type of analysis better than men. I see it within, my own company, and I see it just sometimes the client environments that I consult with. But I think that, as it was mentioned, this industry is not going away, but it is changing. So the landscape of what we're seeing as threats, initially it was largely network-based. Now we're moving into the application space, and that's maturing. And then now we're going into the Internet of Things, into mobile-related security concerns. So anyone, male or female, coming into this space, and I think that some of the most, the largest international women leaders will say, it's not about male, female, or anything else. It's about just, knowledge, right? So you have to be able to move at the speed of how these threats are evolving. If you are, proficient in understanding architecture of how, Internet of Things, of understanding how these devices are engineered and what are their limitations and how they interact with the web and cloud infrastructure, then that's going to, set you apart. And I think that it's safe to say that any employer is going to not look at, whether they're male or female. They're going to look at, hey, this person knows their stuff. And
right.
Like, bring
can
them
they
on
get
board.
The job done?
Exactly, yeah.
Good stuff. Dave, what do you think about this? What does the landscape look like for employment? This is a career you would recommend?
Absolutely. I started out in the audit side of this and moved into the cybersecurity side of it as a result of seeing constant gaps in controls. But overall, yes, it's definitely a career that, as Dave King said, is not going to go away anytime soon. So, definitely one, if anyone has any interest at all, then there's plenty of, opportunities at the collegiate level and then beyond, getting your feet wet in this career is always a good thing.
And let's get the good ones before they go to the dark side, right, Tony?
that's exactly right. Yeah.
That's important.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there is a lot of money to be made on the dark side, but you're really having to get people that like to chase the bad guys, like to play detective, like to think like the bad guys in order to catch them. And, speaking about, finding, what makes a information security professional rise above the rest is that specific mentality. Are they thinking checkbox, or are they thinking more like how an attacker would actually compromise different facets of your network, of your application.
And proactively,
right?
I mean, like you mentioned, compliance is not security. You know, the map is not the territory. You have to look at things as they are and how they could be tomorrow.
Exactly, right.
So now, before we go, I'd like to know some tips, low-hanging fruit for companies. Password tips, how often should they be changing passwords? The dumbest password you've ever heard of. Is it password?
Password, right.
Yeah, so...
Go ahead.
Plenty to say there.
Yeah, there is. I could start with just some password hints. I think a simple recommendation is using password management solutions that are out there, and there's a lot to choose from. Password management solutions are aimed at you as an individual knowing just one master password, and really it should be suggested to use a passphrase. So you might take your favorite verse from a poem and then alter some of the, add some special characters. But it could be like a 30, you know, it could be a long sentence, but it's something that you maybe think about, or something that's, you know, that you don't have on Facebook, that you don't have on social media, that, right, you know, is out there. And so a master password unlocks all of your other passwords, and your other passwords are usually created using a password generator. These solutions that are out there, and there's KeePass, there's 1Pass, there's LogMeIn, there's Dashlane, there's tons of solutions that are out there. This, from an individual level, highly suggested, especially around, we're coming up into the high holiday season.
That's hacker season, right?
That's hacker season, right? You got Cyber Monday coming in, you got Black Friday coming up, you got the high shopping season. And then also, during tax season, you know, there's a lot of tax-related frauds that we saw this past year, and it happens every year. So getting a good handle on passwords, obviously never sharing passwords and so forth. But those are some quick, simple tips there.
For me, security awareness. Security awareness within your organization is probably the one thing that employees cannot unsubscribe themselves from. Mm-hmm. So this is the one thing that you can bombard your employees with, and literally they're going to say, yeah, I'm so tired of hearing of this, but they're going to remember it when that phishing attack comes through.
Right. You got to be relentless.
Exactly. And this is the one thing that you can actually be relentless on, and, you know, there's no repercussions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, the first thing that comes to mind is two-factor authentication. So there's plenty of, you know, webmail systems, Gmail, for example, that offer two-factor authentication. And all that means is, in addition to your password, it's something else that you use to log into that account that nobody has. So any account that you have, a banking account or a webmail account, any account that you have online that offers two-factor authentication, sign up for it. It's still just as easy to log in, and it protects your personal and financial data immeasurably.
To that point, we were talking earlier about the challenges with managing external vendors and, you know, those third-party relationships that every business has. All of them are connected. We talked about the HVAC vendor and the Target. Two-factor authentication back in the day was expensive. You had the little tokens that had the extra PIN numbers on them that had to be synchronized with the software. That was a very expensive system. Nowadays, you can do two-factor authentication via your mobile phone. And it's not expensive. There's no excuse. And, you know, had Target had two-factor authentication for those HVAC vendors, that breach likely would not have occurred.
Now, Tony, if somebody wanted to learn more about you and your firm and have a more substantive conversation, website for you guys?
Sure. It's www.versprite.com. It's VERSPRITE.com.
And Glenys?
It is www.ventivtech.com, VENTIVTECH.com.
Dave?
Okay, we're at UHY Advisors. That's UHY-US.com.
And then on your site, you can find a lot of white papers. You have a lot of thought leadership in this.
Certainly, absolutely. There's an area under our internal audit risk and compliance practice where you can find out the host of services that we offer, and cybersecurity is certainly among those.
And I think what I learned today, among many other things, compliance is not security.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And people are the weakest link.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our fearless producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson, our guest today, and of course, our underwriters, UHY Advisors, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you next time on Cause and Effect.